his grand-mère. The top was smoky quartz, rubbed and polished until it was nearly spherical. Its base was uncut granite, the same rugged shape as when it emerged from the mud. A generation had passed, with none of the Oschiers seeing so much as a spark in it. Agnès and her sisters swore that their grandmother could bring the crystal to life just by touching it. They widened their eyes and lowered their voices when they told the tale, claiming the crystal bloomed with light under her hands. Ursul doubted the truth of this, and with good reason. The Oschiers were notorious spinners of stories, even for their own family members. She suspected that her mother's grand-mère had simply been more adept than Agnès at fooling everyone. Her mother had devised a way to make the crystal appear to glimmer as she moved her hands across its cloudy face. It required a strategically placed lamp at her feet, a twitch of her foot to move her skirt aside, a practiced motion of her hands to hide the reflection in the crystal, and then, at an opportune moment, to reveal it. Agnès excelled at reading her customers, if not at scrying in the crystal. She gave them a flood of rosy predictions, marring the optimistic future with just enough bad news to make it all seem real. The seekers handed over their money for the most part without demur. If they didn't, they learned how fast Ursul could run and how loudly she could shout. Today, a townswoman had come with a friend, the two of them clinging together for courage. They were dressed in traditional Brittany fashion, dark fabrics with white scarves over their bodices and lacy aprons. They rolled their eyes this way and that, sniffing at the odours of cooked hare and boiled beans that hung over the encampment, eyeing the bright, ragged dresses of the Romani. They lifted their skirts to avoid the dirt of the camp and shrank away if any of the grimy children came too near. After Ursul seated the customer on a stool opposite her mother, Agnès told the woman's fortune, at great length. When the two women turned to leave, she called out to the other one, "Wait, madame, I have a message for you too." Ursul lifted her scarf across her face to hide her smile. There would be two fees today. She was ready to add her persuasive touch to the process, but it turned out there was no need. The second woman turned back and took the stool opposite Agnès, eager to hear what her own future held. She listened open-mouthed as Agnès predicted a sudden stroke of good luck that would bring money into her house. Agnès followed with a warning about being careless with the money, because someone was watching her. Someone not afraid to steal. The woman nodded and cast a meaningful glance at her friend as if she knew just who that would be. Ursul collected the double fee and watched the two satisfied customers hurry off toward the village, arm in arm, giggling together over the success of their reading. Her uncle Arnaud appeared at her elbow, holding out his broad, dirty hand for the coins. She dropped them into his palm and he scowled.
"Where's the rest?"
Ursul blinked. "Uncle Arnaud, what do you mean? That's the payment."
"This isn't enough," he growled. "What did you do with it?"
"Me? I did nothing."
"They cheated you then?"
She hung her head to hide the gleam of her eyes. "If they did, I didn't know it, uncle. Perhaps I counted wrong?"
"You count wrong."
It was a preposterous claim for her to make, of course. Everyone in the clan, no matter how odd they thought Ursul to be, acknowledged her talent for numbers. They called her clever when they wanted to flatter her, or when they needed her to translate from their patois to French or Breton. When they were angry, they said she didn't know how to keep her place, that she should stop showing off, that she should leave business matters to the men. For those reasons and more, Ursul hugged to herself the